Welcome to Rewilding Love. This season is with a couple on the brink of divorce.
This is episode number 5, Sparring with Mateo.
I may have just made the biggest mistake of my life.
I don't understand where things went wrong.
The quality of the relationship is actually a quality of the state of mind of the individuals in the relationship.
In any given moment, his vibe just changes and it's like, boom, like you hate me all of a sudden.
Is the juice worth the squeeze? You know, there's a lot of squeezing. I'm not getting much juice out of it.
I think that he is suffering from some sort of depression.
To understand that our experience comes from within, to me, is the ultimate in empowerment.
It's a ride at a funfair. We go up and down. We are in up mood and we love each other, and we go into a low mood and we hate each other.
See, for the most part, I'm Pirates of the Caribbean where there's only one drop and one rise. Okay, everything else is pretty fucking flat in my life.
Right.
Hers, it's corkscrewing, it jumps the track sometimes, like it does crazy shit.
You are listening to Rewilding Love with me, Angus Ross.
And me, Rohini Ross.
Rewilding Love is a podcast about relationships.
We believe that love never disappears completely in relationships. It can always be rewilded. Listen in as we guide a real couple back to their natural state of love.
Relax and enjoy the show.
Angus, when I listen back to your session with Mateo, it sounds like he really gave you a pretty good run for your money, and you had to really stay on your toes with him.
Yes, you could say that. He was very resistant to me trying to share this idea with him that Alicia can in no way affect his sense of well-being, and that's all on his shoulders. And that's where he felt compelled to hold this very strong defensive line. So I had to look for all kinds of creative ways to penetrate that defensive line. And I don't know if I did it ultimately, but that was definitely the line that I was looking for. And, you know, kudos to him for meeting me every step of the way in that respect.
Well, we'll get to hear all of your creative ways that you tried to get your point across. But we can start out with just hearing him share a little bit about that bombshell that really got things moving in terms of them deciding to work on the relationship.
Sounds like a good idea to me.
Do you talk about leaving each other or?
Yeah.
I know in the heat of the moment last night she shared that she wanted to have a divorce, but is that something that's...
I expressed it a couple months ago, and that's what initiated her going to therapy. That's what initiated her getting in contact with yourself. I was ready to move. Like, I don't know why.
Right. And is that something that's now based... did you kind of lay down the law and say, yes, if things don't change, I'll move?
I had divorce papers signed, ready to give to her to sign. I had everything ready.
Okay.
And... the way that she,
so you're pretty far along in this.
Well, she talked to me about it, and again, another roadblock of why she's been the way she is, right? And like I said, I mean, there's that energy behind her eyes that I'm kind of weak for, and it's like, okay, all right. So where am I right now? I want everything to work out. How much longer can I withstand this living in this negative household? I don't know.
Well, the good news is that he does want the relationship to work, but you can tell just in the way that he says that there's conditions on that, and he wants the relationship to work if she changes.
Yes, there is that significant caveat that for the relationship to work, there has to be a significant change as far as Alicia is concerned.
And we all know how well that goes when one person in the relationship wants the other person to be different.
Oh, are you present company included in that?
Well, we definitely...
Or excluded?
Included.
Okay.
When you say we... went through that at the beginning of our relationship?
Yeah, I would say significantly. I would say that I always imagined that you would change and that I'd have the woman that the woman of my dreams. And I imagine you probably had some similar tape running in your head.
I absolutely did.
And it is always a recipe for disaster. You know, there's this sort of preoccupation with taming and controlling our partner to fit into our standards and expectations. And it just kind of creates hostility, ultimately. Certainly, you know, the hostility born out of a level of resentment.
And what happens is that it is toxic toward the goodwill in the relationship. That just goes out the window.
Yeah, always. As we well know.
Yeah. Well, we've learned that the hard way, and hopefully we can help them see something differently for themselves around that.
Yeah, I'd like to think that that's, you know, we earned our stripes in that respect and can hopefully share our knowledge and know-how about how to negotiate our way through that with the likes of Alicia and Matteo.
And so here's an example of what is not working for him in the relationship.
Let's just take a real quick life example is, you know, I'm not comfortable with the conversations. I feel like it's very aggressive, blah, blah, blah. I'm not showing any emotional or physical romance, you know, romance towards her. Okay, so let's take the first instance. She gets pissed off. I know that that's the reason why she's getting pissed off, but she's bringing up something else, right? So then I'll let her spin out. I just ask her not to yell. Bring down your voice, please. I also have sensitive ears, so I don't really like loud noises. She'll apologize, right? Well, it also takes me time to get over that crazy baby tantrum that just took place. And let's just say it's day two, and I haven't been physically romantic with her. Because I'm in this state of mistrust and like, oh my God, that was so exhausting for me. Well, day two comes around and here comes the same bullshit. And it's like, okay, you want me to reach this point to be this person and I want you too, but you're not allowing enough time for me to feel those feelings again. You know, that's why in the beginning I was like, maybe I should just move out. I want to move out. You know, I want to get my own place and live in my own silence so I don't have to come to this every day. So that way I can kind of break the trend of being mentally exhausted from that.
Well, Matteo is sharing his tale of woe with you. And my guess is that he feels pretty strongly that he's got good evidence to substantiate his claims as to why he feels the way he does and how that makes sense in terms of why his behavior is the way that it is currently. And you don't respond in the way that he's probably expecting you to at this point.
Yeah, I mean, you say it's a tale of woe. I look at it as being more of a sales pitch. You know, here's his product and I am hopefully the willing customer, but in this case, a not so willing customer. I'm not really buying any of that. And there's probably a little frustration for him in that respect.
Well, what the product is that he's trying to sell you is that he's a victim to Alicia and you're just not buying that.
Yeah, that would be a case of like, yeah, make sure that you look at the small print and there's a 30-day return policy on that.
So we'll hear what you share with him next, but I'm guessing that he was perhaps a little surprised.
Yeah, I think he was.
All I'm going to do really over the next few days is just continuously point you in this direction of seeing things, at some point seeing things differently, seeing that there's nothing that she can do in her behavior, you know, in terms of the words that she's sharing with you, that really affects your state of mind. You affect your own state of mind. You're feeling your own thinking. And there's something, there is an insight wrapped up in that that's very liberating. And it goes against the grain of pretty much all of our programming. And it gets harder and harder as we get older and older because those neural pathways just get stronger and stronger over years. And particularly in the course of a relationship, you know, you've had X amount of time together. How many years have you been together?
7
So 7 years of creating very strong narratives around, you know, what were probably once old standards and expectations that are not being fulfilled, or new behaviors that are unacceptable, that have morphed into something else. Those are all, that's all in the intellect, but that's not in the moment. The moment will be now is, I guess, the real hope, I would think. The hope that I would have for you is that you would like keep an open mind and an open heart in the face of what I'm sharing with you and what's being shared with her, and seeing things through that lens. With this, if this is new information for you, on whatever level this is registering with you, if you can see things unfold differently.
I would love for them to. And I feel like I am approaching the days with optimism. Just sometimes, you know what? I don't need physical contact right now, because last night you were nuts, all right? But I'm still open-minded. We can have chat. Like, it's all good. My slate isn't wiped clean. I trust you today. Like, I trusted you yesterday. No big deal. But right now, this is my personal space, and I want this. So I do approach it with an open mind. It's just the level of the rate at which I, you know, open myself out 100% is not being received well by my counterpart.
I'm imagining that this might be hard for him to hear at this point. And I guess it would probably be quite hard for many people to hear. So it would be good for us to take some time to really clarify what you mean by what you're saying.
I would say a wholehearted yes, because I think that clarification is often, in my experience, falls on deaf ears. So I think we're probably going to be saying this more than once. I'm going to be looking for all sorts of creative ways, like I was with Matteo, to convey this message.
Yes, absolutely.
Because this is a pivotal message in this understanding, and it's hard for people to understand.
Yeah, this is key. So what you're saying to him is that he is not experiencing Alicia's behavior directly, that there's her behavior, then there's his thinking about her behavior, and what he's really experiencing is the thinking that he's identifying with.
So far, so good.
But in his mind, that thinking is invisible to him, so it really looks to him like he is experiencing her directly and that she is the cause for his suffering.
Always.
In his mind. And so what you're trying to help him to see is that that's not possible, because that's not how it works. That every single one of us experiences life via our thinking. And that's what we identify with, and that's what creates our internal experience. And one of the most profound examples of what's possible for humans around this, I think, is the example of Viktor Frankl, who was a psychiatrist who was a prisoner in one of the concentration camps in the Second World War. And in that experience, he was able to be in the feeling of love and compassion, not just for himself, not just for the fellow prisoners that he was with, but that even extended to the guards. And that circumstance of being in a concentration camp did not determine his internal experience. Now, I know that's an extreme example, but it really points to the potential of what's available to all of us as human beings. And that ultimately, our experience is a reflection of our state of mind and the thinking that we're identifying with. That's where it comes from. And when we see that, we get so much internal freedom and liberation, because we can never be victimized by those outside of us. We're still free. And I'm not condoning bad behavior. I'm not condoning violence or abusive behavior on any level. I want to be really clear about that. But to understand that our experience comes from within, to me, is the ultimate in empowerment.
And probably one of the most important things to be garnered from this understanding, if not the most important thing.
And we really want everyone that's listening to see if they can have an open mind around this to see if it's possible to really recognize that experience comes from within. And we have examples in our day-to-day lives about this. We can be in a situation and in one state of mind, the situation will look really difficult and impossible. And then maybe we go for a walk or we have a nap or we wake up the next morning and nothing can have changed. And we can have a completely different experience about that situation.
Yeah, I wholeheartedly agree with that. I think that, you know, this is the significant next step for anybody to take who can first embrace the idea that it's nothing to do with external circumstances. It's not the other person's fault. It's always our thinking that we embrace that idea. And then we just start to see how that's where suffering comes from. And then we can stop identifying with the thinking, or at least become better equipped to see how this is always a reflection of our state of mind. This is, you know, for me, that's such a big part of this understanding, in tandem with this idea that it's not the other person or the other party or the external circumstances. So often what shows up in our thinking is a reflection of our state of mind. So if we're in a low mood, the reflection in us in our behavior is going to be that state of mind, really, more than anything else.
And what's so hopeful also, when we recognize that our experience is coming from the thoughts that we're identifying with, when we see, you know, as they say, it's an inside job, then we know that the nature of thought is to settle. We know that the mind is designed to come to a place of peace. That is the natural state. So if we're caught up in painful thinking, all we need to do is let our mind relax and settle, and then we're going to come out of that experience. So to me, that's the ultimate in hopefulness, because suffering only is chronic and continuous when we keep feeding that thinking and living in the feeling of that. But when we understand that the thinking is the cause of suffering, and we let our mind relax and we leave that thinking alone, the mind naturally settles and we open up to what is behind that, which is our peace of mind and our inner freedom.
Yeah, beautifully said. And without understanding, what we're left with is painful thinking begets more painful thinking. It just creates a vicious spiral that, you know, takes us down a rabbit hole of pure dismay and discontent.
And it has us look in the wrong direction in the way that Mateo's doing. He's believing that his suffering is coming from outside of himself, rather than seeing that the way he's engaging with his thoughts is actually where his suffering is coming from. And so because it looks like it's coming from Alicia, he's putting all his energy into trying to figure out how to change her, how to control her, how to tame her, how to run away from her. He's putting all his energy into that direction, which has nothing to do with his suffering.
Yeah, and just continually throwing more oxygen at that fire.
Well, Mateo's not buying it, so we'll hear from him next.
Like, I'm not Nelson Mandela trying to free, you know, or end apartheid. You know what I mean? Like, I'm not Gandhi who's, you know, fighting for some revolution. I'm a man who's in his household,
yes,
who has a choice to either go through the shit or not.
Yeah.
You know? I'm not leading a revolution, so I don't know what I'm supposed to do other than expect change from someone else to allow me to be the person that I want to be and the person that they want me to be, right? But it does take change from another angle, as well as my new enlightened, you know, mentality of how to look at things. I don't think that's what's clouded.
Mateo really can't see how he's responsible in terms of where his experience is coming from. And he emphasizes here again how he's fine, and really this is all on Alicia being different. And what I love about the tack that you take at this point is you're recognizing that he's not able to take on board what you're saying. And so you move away from their specific circumstance and personal situation because it's clearly too much of a hot spot for him to have perspective on. And you shift gears and you go in a different direction and give another example that is not about their specific situation, a more generic example that still illustrates the point that you're making, but hopefully because it's not about them specifically, he's going to be able to hear it in a more neutral way and take on board what you're saying.
Yeah, I mean, I just had to keep looking for an opening and hope at some point I will find that pathway to get into a point where he'd be able to receive even the smallest glimmer of this understanding. And because really up until now, he's just decided it's an open shut case, that he's come to court, he's got all his paperwork, he's got all this substantial evidence, and he's just looking at me as the judge. He's just going to throw the book at Alicia, and he can go on his merry way. Case dismissed.
Actually, let's go at this approach this another way. So in the corporate world, what we do with this understanding, we talk about becoming discouragement proof. So in a corporate environment, or actually let's look at it in a sales environment, you know, a salesman has to constantly expose themselves to ridicule and criticism, let's say, or that's maybe a fear that they have. Mm-hmm. With this understanding, taking on this idea that I cause my own suffering, they're not responsible for how I'm feeling inside. Someone on the end of a cold call can say what they want, but that's if I run with that, that's me creating that issue. So that's how we define it in terms of being discouragement proof. And in the same way in a relationship, that's what we're pointing to, is becoming discouragement proof. Mm-hmm. It's not taking anything that they bring to the table, and usually it's what they bring to the table in a low mood and they're all sped up and they say things that could be perceived as hurtful. We start to see, yeah, they're just sped up. They're out of balance. I don't need to take that shit personally because that's nothing to do with me. But if I take that on board and I take that personally, and then my neural pathways begin to develop, I begin to create this like great big story and the physiology that can come with that story.
Yeah.
That's doing ourselves a total disservice.
You guys should really put like a hidden camera and watch us interact.
I used to say the same thing. I said, if this was a court of law and we had a hidden camera, the jury would be convicting you, not me.
I have this quite vivid memory of you saying exactly the same thing to me in the apartment in West Hollywood. I'm sure you said it more times than that one time, but that's the memory that really jumps into my mind. Do you remember that?
Yes, I did. Yes, I do. Before the age of reality TV, I must have had some sort of premonition that that may be coming. But I feel like, yes, if we had a camera covering all of our interactions, that I would have been seen as the party that was really following, you know, what I would perceive as the more appropriate moral compass, or the moral high ground, at least, anyway.
So you must be able to quite relate to Matteo.
Well, I could understand the mindset. I don't know if I relate to him in these terms, but I do understand it.
And I do too. And what strikes me about that kind of comment is that there's an attachment to that level of righteousness. And whenever any of us get into that position where we believe that we are right and the other person is wrong, we automatically have a closed mind and we lose touch of the big picture. We're not able to have empathy and really understand where the other person is coming from because of that righteousness.
Yeah, well, I would say that if I was to relate this to myself now, I feel like moving through life, I'm starting to notice that if I'm in judgment, that judgment is kind of like my check engine light, that, you know, I'm already, my state of mind has probably gone south, and I probably shouldn't be trusting anything that's coming out of my mouth, because it's being fueled by thinking that's being really dictated to by my state of mind. So if I can become more adept at seeing that, then that's where I feel like life starts to look a whole lot better. But yes, there is this position of righteousness that Mateo has adopted, but it's coming from a place of judgment. And so then one has to ask oneself, what's going on with your state of mind, brother?
Well, I think a really good rule of thumb for all of us is that as soon as we are in the feeling of judgment, which goes along with righteousness, that we know we can't trust our state of mind at that point. It's gone south.
Yeah, I would concur wholeheartedly.
Well, you're discouragement proof, and you take one more foray into seeing if he can recognize he's not a victim to her behavior. And you even at this point start trying to throw in some personal examples of what worked for us.
Yes, this was my Robert the Bruce moment. Do you know the story of Robert the Bruce?
I do know the story because you've told me, but others might not.
Oh, well, Robert the Bruce was a Scottish king who once defeated on the field of battle by the English Sassenachs, found himself or sought refuge in a cave, and he watched this spider make this web again and again and again, because every time the spider finished this very intricate web, the wind would blow and he'd have to start from scratch. He or she, I don't know, didn't really go into gender. But the spider would start from scratch, and Robert the Bruce took his inspiration from there and continued on and finally defeated the English.
And so you are rebuilding your web?
Yeah, so if at first you don't succeed, you keep trying and trying and trying again.
But the things that she says to you when she's out of balance, she's just running her story. She's just running a million stories that have been programmed into her head, probably by her family, her peers, by whatever.
Reality TV,
whatever's coming forward. It's like she's refracting that in her own inimitable way.
Yeah, I believe so.
But that's, if she's coming at you when she's out of balance and she's, you know, her story, the intellect is always going to throw up all that stuff. It's going to throw up all that shit always, because it's the intellect. That's what it does. The intellect is trying to figure this whole dynamic out. It's in fight or flight and it's trying to figure things out. We used to joke around this idea that, so I don't know if you're familiar with the idea of the lizard brain. Have you heard of that?
Mm.
I mean, I'm not a neuroscientist and I don't know much about neuroscience, but there's a part of the brain, scientists have nicknamed it the lizard brain, and it's the oldest part of the brain. It's the part of the brain which governs flight or flight. And that's basically the most well-developed part of a lizard's brain is fight or flight. So they only really know flight or flight.
Mm-hmm.
Let's say, you know, flight or fight, and well, let's fornicate. That's basically, that's the life of a lizard. So, but we have that in our head. And so we get into an experience where we feel fear. And it's like, what are we going to do with this? And then the intellect wants to get on board and figure things out. So this is almost like it's like the two are kind of in cahoots with one another. So we always used to joke that I would behave like, I'd be like this gecko turning into Godzilla. And I'd be like out of balance, and Rohini would do this sort of thing with her mouth like a lizard, like sticking its tongue out. And usually it would, like, I would see the funny side and it would kind of break the pattern. But it's kind of, for me, it's really interesting to look at that and look at how we just tell ourselves these stories. We just, like, we have our flight or flight mechanism. Mm-hmm. We have our intellect that's trying to make sense of it all. And the intellect will basically regurgitate all kinds of crap that have come through in points where we're usually out of balance and created this whole narrative. And then it becomes this well-worn path that we can easily default into.
What I hear you pointing to in this section is that when we get into a low mood, we really cannot trust the content of our thinking. And for Mateo, this is quite invisible to him. He doesn't seem to have any understanding of how his mood changes and how his thinking gets distorted when his mood drops. It seems that he really feels that he's just completely rational and logical all the time. But in this next section, you try an attempt at addressing this through using a ride metaphor.
Yeah, I mean, I think you're absolutely right. I think that really, Matteo, it's becoming very self-evident that his mood is something that really is a blind spot for him. And I think that that's why I've been really harping on about how our thought is always a reflection of our state of mind. And perhaps I got a little lost in the neuroscience piece, which is, I think, totally above my pay grade. But I feel like he's just not seeing how his state of mind is really obfuscating the lens through which he's seeing his relationship. And if we can somehow make some headway there, then I think we'll see some movement.
And I think we can all relate to that. I think every one of us experiences good moods and low moods. And when we get reflective and notice it, we can see how the quality of our thinking changes based on the mood that we're in. It's really quite common sense. But oftentimes, especially when we're in a low mood, I know I can speak for myself, is that we don't recognize that our thinking isn't clear in that moment. And we think that we are seeing things exactly as they are. We don't realize that our thinking has got limited and restricted and is actually not accurate.
Yeah, because it's not at all complicated what we're sharing. Really, at the end of the day, we could just talk about this in terms about being state of mind. If we become more aware of our state of mind and how that affects our thinking, and then how our thinking, born out of my state of mind, really has a strong bearing about how we see the world that we live in, then that's a game changer right there.
Yeah, we can tell that when our thinking gets distorted, it's not even about not having that happen. What really makes the difference is just knowing when our thinking is distorted and recognizing when we can trust it. Like, that is a huge game changer.
Yeah, hallelujah.
It's a ride at a fun fair. We go up and down. We are in up mood and we love each other, and we go into a low mood and we hate each other. In that low mood, we can come up with all kinds of shit. You can be an arsehole in that low mood, but you're not an arsehole when the relationship's up here.
See, for the most part, I'm Pirates of the Caribbean, where there's only one drop and one rise. Okay, everything else is pretty fucking flat in my life.
Right.
Hers, it's corkscrewing. It jumps the track sometimes, like, it does crazy shit. And I'm sitting there just taking this beating, you know, whether it's word vomiting
or something else. Yeah, but you can't see it. I guess where I want to go is you can't see it as you taking a beating, because if you take dominion over your feelings, you're actually the one with a superpower. She can't touch you. She can't. There's nothing that she can say that can touch you, because you're seeing that she's gone into her bullshit. If the other party is able to hold a neutral space and not putting their defenses up, which could look like I'm like cocooning myself in my secret zone where you can't touch me, and that's my defense system, and they're registering that. If you can actually be neutral and saying, yeah, I can see you're kind of fucked up at the moment.
Yeah.
But I'm not, it's not going to affect me. You're just like, you know, whatever tangent you're going on, then that's nothing to do with me.
Wow, I was getting on my high horse a little back there. Maybe it had too much caffeine, I don't know. Touch of over-exuberance in trying to drum home my point, maybe.
Well, something that stands out to me is that in the way that you were framing it, it was somewhat aligned with his already quite strong idea that it's like, hey, baby, it's your issue. It's nothing to do with me.
Yeah, you do listen back to that, and I definitely got a sense that he felt as though I may be rallying to his cause, but that was not the direction that I was going in. I was just trying to maybe use too strong a language to sort of suggest that when someone, when their state of mind goes south and they kind of lose the plot, that they've kind of gone a little bit crazy. But maybe in the terms in which I articulated that, he may have well thought that I was suggesting, yes, that Alicia is crazy, and that you are the one that is in a state of continual equanimity. When all I was just trying to do was just illustrate the point that this person has got caught up and that, you know, you don't have to take that personally. And ideally, you'd probably have some compassion for the fact that that's where their mindset had gone.
Yeah, I think that's the important part for me, that when we genuinely can see that somebody's behavior when they're angry, when they're upset, that that's a reflection of them suffering, and we aren't taking it personally, we tend to feel some compassion and empathy in that situation. And again, I want to emphasize the importance of us not condoning acting out behavior. So we're not saying that it's okay if somebody's acting out in an angry or aggressive way and that we are condoning that. But we are saying that the more, if we're on the receiving end of that, we can see that that's got nothing to do with us. And that's a reflection of that person's state of mind. The more clarity we will have, the more empowered we will feel to be able to take action that is going to be self-honoring and to make healthy choices for ourselves. So we're absolutely not saying you have to stay there and receive whatever the anger is, but it's in that clarity of knowing that it's not personal, that it's about their state of mind, that then you can take the action that is in your best interest in that moment and ultimately probably for the highest good of everybody.
Yeah, because you, when we find a way to move to that higher ground, which hopefully, you know, that's what I was trying to suggest to Matteo, is that you will be able to identify the suffering that your partner is experiencing. And you won't, you know, view this situation as you behaving like, you know, feeling like you're being a doormat. You're actually, you're seeing their suffering, and you can at the very least have a sense of neutrality about that situation, and at the very best have this experience of compassion, that knowing that what they're going through is really born out of suffering. It's as simple as that. And that they don't need to take it personally. He doesn't need to take it personally, but we haven't got there yet.
No, but you do give it another shot.
All right, I do. I'm not going down without a fight.
For my money, change really, you know, that it's so funny. And, you know, from my own experience and then in doing this, you know, time and time again, people usually come in with this, you know, come into a relationship where if it doesn't feel right, there's this sort of hope that things, you know, they'll be able to change the person or the person will change. It's kind of like that grass is always greener mentality, that once they change this aspect of this their personality, everything will be good. But it's kind of like there's some shift that needs to take place, for my money anyway, where that just has to be taken off the table. It's kind of like, I think, and I've seen this time and time again, people can figure things out, and the shift comes when they just, they're kind of, maybe the person or the spouse can carry on regardless with their behavior, but it's a case of not taking that personally anymore. And in the same way that we do corporate work, it's like when we have dysfunction in a corporate environment, it's usually because people are taking each other's behavior personally, and then there's conflict. It's kind of like letting that go, and something about that letting that go elicits change. Like, oh, there's a metaphor like that I like to use where, and I've heard this, and it's not my own metaphor, but apparently there is an aeronautical principle that if you get into a tailspin, you are supposed to just let go of the controls and the craft will right itself. And it's kind of like our intellect wants to like figure things out, wants to control this, wants to control our environment and really hang on for dear life. And that's kind of like, in terms of how you're explaining the dynamic between you, you kind of both are really hanging on to those controls because you want to figure things out. But in a sense, you just got to let it go. And that letting it go is just not taking any of the other person's behavior personally. Unless they're physically harming you, there's really nothing they can do to affect your thinking. That is all on you or me, or it's all on us. We are kind of masters of our own domain, masters of our own intellect. And all the stuff that we make up in the face of someone else's behavior, it's just stuff that we make up. It's just an illusion. It's the matrix that we go into.
Yeah.
That's coming from you taking it personally. You took all of that personally. And
it's not personal. It's my life that I'm taking personal. It's, oh my God, I'm spending my Friday night yelling with this chick, you know, who's my wife, supposed to be my life partner. when, you know, I was 29, right? I'm thinking this in the couch. I'm like, oh my God, this is the worst Friday night of my life. It's not that I'm taking it personally. I'm taking the waste of my time and my life personally.
Right.
That's, I'm not, the words don't affect me. The time that I can't get back, that affects me. The things that I could be doing other than in that moment, yelling, bitching, crying, all this shit, that's what I take personally. Not the words. The words I don't care about. I'd rather be, you know, on the beach, taking a walk, doing whatever, other than that in that moment.
Well, yeah, I mean, the words really are just, you know, I mean, the words are just what we put on our feelings.
Yeah,
but you're taking the feelings personally. You're taking her level of feeling personally.
I'm taking away what I consider wasted time personally.
I really don't understand what he means when he says he's taking the waste of his time personally.
Well, I think he's actually grasping at straws, and I think he doesn't understand what it means to take someone else's behavior personally, because it still all amounts to the same thing. He can take her, he can say that he's not taking her shouting or her anger personally, and he's now saying, oh, it's all about the fact that she's kind of robbing me of my time, or time that I could spend doing other things that would be more enjoyable. But it's still, he's making her responsible for his well-being, or robbing him of his well-being. So yes, of course, he's taking her behavior personally. It's her behavior. It's always her behavior. Her behavior is robbing him of time, as far as he's concerned, and that's how he's taking it personally. Even though he's saying he's not taking it personally, he is.
Yeah, there's two things that he's really not seeing. One is that he's not able to see that Alicia's behavior is a reflection of her state of mind and the thinking that she's identifying with in the moment. And the other thing that he doesn't seem able to really see is that he has choice in the situation. It feels, the way that he talks about it, that he has absolutely no choice and no ability to take care of himself and to set healthy boundaries with her.
Yeah. And it's kind of almost like, for me, when I listen to Matteo at this point, he doesn't really understand the line of questioning or what I'm trying to share. So it reminds me, and my brother went through this years ago, there is some kind of training that you can do in London, and probably you can do it worldwide. I'm sure there are political consultants every day training politicians how to deal with the media. But my brother went through this training, and they kind of they put you through the situation where you might have to field a really difficult question or be expected to come up with an intricate answer, you know, being pressed to come up with that answer. And so the training consists of like doing everything you can to avoid having to give the answer that's expected of you, and look for ways to do that, and keep on doing that until the interviewer gives up. And in a sense, it's kind of how I feel with Matteo. He doesn't really get this whole idea of seeing that it's nothing to do with Alicia in terms of his well-being being affected. It's all to do with his line of thinking. And so, yeah, he's trying to pull every hat out of the bag that he can, and now it's about being robbed of his precious time.
You know, it reminds me of how you felt completely victimized by Nico, our puppy, when we got him. Do you remember that?
Yes, I do.
And that you weren't able to see that there was any possibility that you could have well-being with this dog, with the way that he was behaving.
Yeah, I was convinced that I was going to be 100% robbed of all future well-being vis-a-vis getting a good night's sleep, having a moment to relax. It seemed like his unrelenting persona would be a real thorn in my side. Well, so when we got Nico, our dearly beloved husky, and we got him from a rescue centre, the surrogate caretaker actually ran a bird sanctuary. And so in her mind and in her innocence, the best way to deal with this dog, who probably wanted to eat all of her rescued birds, was to put it in a muzzle. So anyway, I guess we kind of won the lottery, or I didn't feel like that at the time, but she decided that we would be the ideal owners for this dog. And so when we got him home, obviously, you know, the first thing we did is take the muzzle off. You know, you can kiss this goodbye. This isn't going to be part of your experience of being a canine anymore. He then proceeded to just to go nuts and you know, bit everything in sight, but not in a in an aggressive way, in a playful way, but you're constantly being gnawed at. And it was just literally unrelenting, you know, every available opportunity to jump on the couch or jump on us and jump on the bed. And it went on to ad nauseum as far as I was concerned. And, you know, you're trying to, you know, get on with your life and you've got this dog going nuts. You know, I'm doing a Zoom call with a coach and my client is perhaps having a very, very emotional moment. And the dog's kind of leaping on me and biting my head and my arm and every other extremity that's available to him. So I decided this is impossible. We can't move forward. We're going to have to give the dog back. And I made the decision that that's what's going to happen. You know, this is untenable. The dog has to be returned to the caretaker. And so I started making noises to that effect. And, you know, I managed to get my wife and my youngest daughter on board. And then I actually managed to get the rescue center on board, although they did actually present me with this caveat before that I made that final decision, would I at least see this trainer? And I was kind of a little bit, I was, you know, at that point my mind was made up, but I did have to have a conversation with my eldest daughter, who I actually thought at that point would be the least resistant to the idea of the dog being returned, because she didn't seem that excited about the acquisition. I think probably because as it turns out, she wanted wanted a very small puppy, not a dog that was 4 months old. But anyway, I thought I wasn't going to have a problem here. And actually, she gave me the third degree and said, you know, you can't give the dog back now. You've made your decision. You've got to kind of made your bed. You've got to lie in it. So I thought, oh, that's interesting. I wasn't expecting that. And so anyway, I thought, well, maybe I'll have another conversation with the rescue center, because it's, you know, I still feel like this dog is a pain in the neck and I want it returned. And then she still took this line of like, you know, just try out this trainer, see what happens, you know, reserve your judgment until you've had this experience with the trainer. Anyway, cut a long story short, the trainer was really not training the dog. The trainer was training me. So the dog was really acting out and just being a dog, a 4-month-old puppy wanting to have fun. And when that fun got too much for me, I was tending to get angry. I was getting reactive, and that's how I dealt with the dog, is you know shouting at it or taking a hard line in that respect. And then the trainer said to me, well, you know what, the most important thing in your relationship with this dog is that you never lose your temper. You kind of, you know, you can have your boundaries and you've got to be alpha wolf, but as soon as you lose your temper, that will be seen as a line of weakness. That will be seen as a sign of weakness. And it will take full advantage of that. And lo and behold, she was absolutely right. Every time I lost my snot with this dog, it would go nuts and make a bad situation 10 times worse. But when I tried on this new approach of like, you know, here's my boundary and I'm going to deliver this information with neutrality, and yeah, there will be a consequence. You might have to be, I don't know, put on a leash or put into the crate or whatever, you know, we decided to do. As long as I did all of that from a place of neutrality, it worked out fine. But as soon as I got angry, the dog just went crazy and would react. And not in an angry way in return. It would just be kind of like, oh, this is fun and games. I don't know this experience very well. This is fun, isn't it? And it would do everything that I wanted it to. It wouldn't do anything that I wanted it to do. So anyway, so that was the story of this dog. For me, it was this incredible lesson in neutrality and not taking his behavior personally. I have the things that I, you know, I have my standards and expectations about, you know, how life with this dog will be. But as long as I continue to sort of have and exact those standards in a neutral way, I'll be good to go. Wow, that was a long story.
Well, the key point that I love about that story is that you were personalizing a dog's behavior, and that was what was upsetting you. And that when we were educated by the trainer about the normalcy of Nico and what he was up to, and that really he just needed to be have some boundaries set and that you could take care of yourself and I could take care of myself. It wasn't that we had to endure being jumped on and bitten for the rest of our days, that we had to create rapport with him. We had to build trust, and that we were reacting to the own narrative that we were creating in our own mind about what this meant in the future, when really we just needed to understand how to be firm and kind and loving, but not to go overboard in terms of the reactivity, is the way that you say.
Yeah, and if, you know, the more that I reflect on this, and this is, I think, across the board in the terms of the work that we do, what I think that I really learned out of that whole exercise was the value to being present with what is. Here I am confronted with a dog, which is actually being nothing more than a happy 4-month-year-old puppy doing what puppies do, and, you know, is dedicated to having fun and jolly japes. And I'm getting into, I'm kind of really being fueled by this negative future fantasy. In my conceptual mind, there are all these ideas of how this dog is going to actually upset the apple cart in terms of, you know, my well-being. And as soon as I sort of bought into that train of thought, that's where the anger and the reactivity would come from. Whereas if I'm in a place where, you know, I don't have to lose my temper here. And really, I'm only losing my temper because I'm getting into that negative future fantasy. If I actually find a way to be present with what is, the dog is being perfectly normal. And if I see that, that's going to make it much better, or I'm going to be much better equipped to have this sense of neutrality. And from that place, there's no reactivity. There's really, I mean, in an ideal world, there's actually some compassion. Here's this poor dog. It's like, had to live its first few months of life with a muzzle on. And of course, it's going to, like, you know, it's like, freedom, let's go crazy. So it was, for me, yeah, that's been an incredible learning. It was an incredible learning curve. But I think most of all by that idea of, like, you know, being present to what is without all of the old patterns of thinking that were really being projected into the future about how that future could look really kind of alarming. And the more that I allow my mind to fester in that made up experience, the worse things got.
Yeah, and what you're speaking to is the importance of your own state of mind and how that was really what was at play. It wasn't really Nico's fault that you were basically feeling like a victim, not because of the dog, but because of how you were relating to your own thoughts in the moment.
Yeah, I mean, I was a complete victim to my own negative future fantasy. It was nothing to do with Nico. All of my feelings and reactivity in that moment were based on something that actually hadn't happened. And as it turns out, didn't happen.
Yeah, he's a lovely dog.
He's a lovely boy, and I adore him. And oh my goodness, thank goodness I didn't take him back to the shelter.
Yeah, I'm very grateful. And you start to go in this direction now with Mateo in terms of turning away from focusing on what he's upset with Alicia about. And now you start to check in more with him about how he's doing. And I think that's a great direction that you went in at this point.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I kind of, upon reflection, I would have ideally liked to talk more about seeing her psychological innocence. I don't know if that would have given me more leverage in the moment. And I did harp on about him taking her behavior personally, but it would have been, I don't know, who knows if he was able, would have been able to hear that. But I felt if I had really pointed more to her psychological innocence in the way that, you know, you can see that when she's caught up and I use terms like her going crazy, maybe there would have been a more palatable way to address that in a sense. And really, you know, for her, for him to see her suffering, to see that she's got caught up for whatever reason she's caught up. And that's a way that she has, she's suffering with her thinking. And I feel like if I'd gone more in that direction or maybe even used that language, who knows, that might have been easier for him to hear. But he was definitely finding it really hard to sort of adopt this idea that, you know, I'm taking her behavior personally. Like, I think, you know, I don't know. It's like, in his mind, it's like, what does that even mean? And that's why I'm getting the sort of the politician's response.
Yeah, and that's why I think it's great that you took a different tack here and started to really check in with him about himself.
Yeah, okay, well, let's see what happens.
I'm mean,
well, let's. Well, can I ask you about your moods? Because I mean, we all, you know, as human beings, we get into low moods from time to time.
Mm-hmm.
How would you describe yourself in that respect? Do you feel like you're kind of pretty much a content person? You had this period of your life where, you know, obviously it sounded very tough, and we would probably define that as a period of time when you're in a particularly low mood. So, you know, suicidal tendencies come, you know, typically from that space.
Yeah.
Is that something? Is like, you know, your sort of regular temperature? Are you feeling like you're kind of more in a state of well-being, or do you tend to sort of drift to the other side of the spectrum?
I feel like I'm a happy person. I'm really driven and really enjoy my work. I think most people would say that I'm happy, but I am in my mind a lot. I'm a thinker.
Yeah,
that's what I do. Is
yeah.
I really sit, I observe, and I play out scenarios and how I can, you know, I mean, I don't know how to explain it. Like, I can see everything.
So I listened to that, and I think it may be important at this point to say that I decided to bring up the suicidal ideation that he was experiencing at one point in his life that, you know, hasn't really cropped up in any of the other recordings. It was something that I was aware of, but I felt like it was important to maybe look at the role that mood plays. So if he has a tendency to sort of get into a low mood, and I kind of get a sense that he does, then it's really important to address the fact that his low state of mind will surely have an effect on the optics through which he's seeing the relationship. So I want him to really, I guess I'm trying to sort of press home a point that it would be very worthwhile considering that. How, you know, whether he's able to receive that information, we'll see. But that was something that I wanted to, that's something I know I set out to do here. Because, yeah, you know, state of mind will always have an effect on the way that we see the world that we live in.
And we want everybody to recognize that. That's not just true in this relationship. Whenever anybody is in a low mood, that's going to impact how they see their life. It's going to impact how they see every aspect of their life. And when we're in a low mood, we really can't trust our thinking when we're in that state of mind.
Yeah, not one bit. The importance of this next bit is that it indicates how Matteo doesn't realize that a busy mind is synonymous with a low mood. So obviously he is, you know, he admits to being an overthinker, but he doesn't see how a low mood and having a busy mind are kind of one and the same.
I would agree, and that he actually thinks all of the overthinking is a really good thing, rather than recognizing that he's actually not able to have a clear mind when he's got a busy mind.
And I can see that you're a deep thinker, and there are some disadvantages around that. So I understand that, you know, an active brain, the active mind is just basically trying to figure things out, finally, you know, creating stories, storing away data. And we tend to sort of forget, you know, which side our bread is buttered, which is, it's like the intelligence behind life working through us, mm-hmm. giving us new information, new fresh thinking. It is actually, that's the sweet spot. But we get so reliant on what we've stored away up here as the way to move forward, that we're kind of missing the point. We have our intellects, and they're really powerful, but it's kind of like they can also lead us into trouble as well. They
yeah.
lead us into anxiety, they lead us into suffering.
I mean, thinking about all the turmoil that we've had, yeah, absolutely, probably not a good exercise for myself and for the well-being of our relationship. Yeah, absolutely.
Well, that's a ray of sunshine right there. Hopefully, I mean, I hope I can feel cautiously optimistic that he's seen something here. But yeah, maybe, who knows? The fact that he's now starting to acknowledge that maybe the fact that he's ruminating on the relationship in the way that he has is not really going to be of service to him or her moving forward.
And I would say there are some more rays of sunshine coming in the next segment where he does take some responsibility.
But I want to be sure that you're taking accountability for how you show up and what you see.
Absolutely. I know I've been a piece of shit to her. I know that I've been this absentee husband. I know that. But something brought me to that. I wasn't born without compassion. On the contrary, I have a lot of love to give. I just don't feel like either it's the right opportunity to give that love because I'm not okay, or I can't give the love because I'm not okay. That does suck. I see that. Trust me, because it hurts me not being able to, come home and just, smacking a fat kiss on my wife and put my arm around her on the couch. Like, how you doing? Right? Like, that's what I want to do. But I don't get the chance to do that in my household.
Right.
It's not like, hey, how you doing? You know what? I'm doing great. You know, I saw this flower today and I was just wondering, like, what kind of plants do you think they have on other planets? Like, what do you think? Like, it's nothing like that. It's always some serious fucking dark shit she's going through.
Well, it is nice to hear him taking some accountability for his behavior, but he is doing it with the caveat that it's because of her behavior that he's being the way he is.
Yeah, I think he's kind of cleverly putting a mask over his victim mindset, which to me is very apparent. And we're not out of the woods yet. You may even be deep in the forest, but we'll see. Somewhat early days, but we'll see how we move forward.
And you are persistent. You got it one more time.
I am certainly tenacious.
You're telling me that her behavior is causing you to suffer, but I'm really going to continue in this vein, that only you create your own suffering.
Mm-hmm.
And we all have our blind spots. It's, when we're introduced to this understanding, it's like, yeah, this understanding, I get it, it makes sense. But if it wasn't for this one area, that's where, it doesn't hold any water. So you're kind of like righteously sticking to your guns on this one. But I'm going to keep going in this direction because I think there's definitely, even if, I would like to think things have changed, but even if they don't, this is valuable information because it is kind of a superpower. In the same way in the corporate understanding, mm-hmm. We show them how they can be discouragement proof. And they don't get affected by what other people say or how they behave or act. And in that settled state, they get new ideas, fresh thinking, new ways to move forward.
Yeah, no, I get it. I do get it. I'm just wondering which side of the coin is going to be getting this.
Well,
it's
I think
real
that,
deep understanding,
I think the cool thing is that it's kind of that, and again, the platitude, all boats rise with the tide, is that as soon as someone kind of like gets it, the other person kind of follows suit. Well, what happens is someone gets it, there's a shift that actually, there's some healing that comes in the shift with just one person getting it, that things start to feel better. Mm-hmm. So you actually could just kick back and do nothing. We could just talk about sports or something for the next 2 days. She has a shift. We'll be good to go.
Yeah, as long as one person shifting, right?
Yeah.
Rising tides.
Yeah. So in a sense, doing couples work is actually quite cool because it's like we only need to get one person to get an insight and we're in good shape.
Well, I know that there's a TV outlet here. You can bring your TV with some fucking footy.
You can catch up on all the shows you're not allowed to watch.
Yeah. Yeah. It's funny. Yeah.
All right. Awesome.
Given how persistent you've been with him and how you have refused to see him as a victim in this situation, no matter how hard he tries to convince you otherwise, I think it's pretty amazing that you have the level of rapport that you do with him. And it's really great to see that lighthearted experience that you have at the end. He's clearly in a better mood after the session.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of a testament to his character. It's interesting that the rapport, he's very sensitive to what's going on in his relationship. So you'd think he probably might be a little bit on the sensitive side if I was to badger him too much. But, nevertheless, we've come through that. And the relationship between he and I is seemingly really good. I mean, he's a great guy. I really love him.
And he's not taking anything that you say personally, which is really impressive.
I know, he's not.
And from my point of view, that good feeling and his lightness and definitely having shifted in that direction throughout the session, to me, that's so important for the work and really more important than him having seen anything at this point.
Yeah, I kind of came away from that session feeling quite hopeful, actually feeling very hopeful, because I saw how his mood changed in a really beautiful way. And you know, if really from that vantage point, I hope that he'll start to see how the relationship takes on an altogether different complexion from those good feelings.
And so next week, we'll hear how my session goes with Alicia.
Sounds good.
Thank you so much for listening to Rewilding Love. If you enjoyed this podcast, please let us know by subscribing on iTunes, and we would love for you to leave a review there.
iTunes reviews will steer people to this podcast who need help with their relationships.
If you would like to learn more about our work and our online rewilding community, please visit our website, therewilders.org.
Thanks for listening. Join us next week.